Welcome to Unleash Your Courage. This is your host, Angela Schroeder, and I am so excited to have an incredible friend and author with me here today, Corey Reed. Thanks for joining us.
Oh my gosh, thank you, Angela. I still look forward to this opportunity. It's going to be great.
I am just so excited to like get to dive in, and we haven't even gotten to have, an in-person conversation. Corey and I get to lunches together and have conversation about our books and life and family and all kinds of things. And you're going to see just a natural conversation because we haven't talked since her book launched.
So. Yeah. And you know, I was thinking about that. I'm like, they should have just recorded probably one of our lunches. That would have been fun.
Well, this is just like that. So before we dive into conversation, Corey, why don't you tell the audience just a little bit about you? You can tell us anything about your highlight reel in life that you want to.
Sure. Now, and thanks for this opportunity. I think it's so cool, first of all, that Turfs Up Radio has this show, Angela. And I'm a big fan of your courage, and you've inspired me. So I am a wife, married 30 years. I have 4 children, 2 women and 2 men. I say that now because they're all in their 20s. And so that's a whole other ball game of parenting. I know you know that, Angela. And I also spent over 20 years working in large corporations, so Fortune 500 companies, and spent quite a bit of time there. And so it's really that balance, everything you talk about. I loved your interview with Angela, and we can talk about that, Maharaj, and just the balance and the pillars of life. And so, wow, there's just so much to talk about there.
Oh, I love it. I can't wait to dive, you know, more into your story and a little bit. Corey, son and my daughter, Hildy, took dance together. So that's how we originally met, being dance moms. And then I told viewers I went to your first book launch.
Yes,
because you didn't know you very well at the time, but just was so excited to celebrate you and your husband, and you know what a big deal that was, and that was a big inspiration in me writing a book. And so then it's been fun to be with you in conversation as this book came out.
Well, and thank you for that. You know, I think it's so fun. I've obviously am a big fan of your book, which I have right here, The Courageous Mind. And I love it. I so appreciate you came. You're right. We were dance moms, but what I didn't mention earlier is my husband was a stay-at-home dad for 20 years while I was working in corporate, doing a lot of travel and other things. And so he had a lot of relationships with people at the studio that I didn't. And that's what we wrote about in our first book. But I think the great opportunity to get to know people and meet people truly who they are, and to use your language, Angela, really those people in your life who do have courage and show up to encourage you is just an incredible opportunity to stay in touch.
Yes. And yeah, that we can go into that first of the power of connections and relationships. And I talk about that at different times. And I don't even know how we reconnected. Now I don't even remember what happened that we reconnected and decided to have lunch the first time.
Yeah, you know, I think what it was is I had written my book, and then I went back and went through life, and we can talk about imposter syndrome, everything that happens between this when you put yourself out there. But then you actually we reconnected at someone else's book launch, and you were in your book journey, and I took courage from you to write this latest book. Because at that point we reconnected, I really was like asking about, you know, I had done some research we can talk about, but I had kind of gotten imposter syndrome.
Yes, we were.
Well, you inspired me. So we've had that journey together.
All these books. but I love it when you can, like you said, have someone and, you know, just be open to those connections and then the relationships. And we've had a very powerful relationship over the last couple of years in my book, and then into you finishing this book, and just how conversations can, like you just said, they should have recorded one of our lunches, because you learn so many things about yourself. And when you are able to have really vulnerable conversations and have a safe space for those conversations, it, you know, you can borrow courage, loan courage, take something in that piece away that can, you know, alter what you can do in your life. But when you're able to be vulnerable, it allows you just to talk through so many things about yourself and work through so many things.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, I was thinking about that as I was preparing for this, and even I just love your spirit of yes, Angela. You really encouraged me in moments when, you know, here I had written a book, you came to that and you wanted inspiration, but then you really inspired me to really write this next book, because it does take some courage, right? And your definition of courage, I love it in your book. Like, you know, it's not about overcoming fear. That's just part of it, right? It really is standing in your ground and feel comfortable taking a stance. And there are moments, I'm sure, from the Turfs Up Radio audience standpoint, that even as a business owner, there are moments of doubt and we all face. And so having a village person with you to remind you of your courage to do that, to live into that, to lean into that. I also was thinking, Angela, that I was really thinking about Turfs Up Radio and this opportunity that you've gotten. I love this. And thinking about, you know, I actually love watching baseball games, but different reasons. My husband loves it, but I love it because the field is always so manicured and beautiful, right? Beautiful, pristine. There's a ground crew there taking care of it. But then I come back to my yard. I'm like, why doesn't my yard look like that? And I always think about that. Like in life, don't we have all those analogies where there's this pristine look, but the real work that goes behind the scenes, whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're in the turf industry or writing, it really is messy in that process, right? That's where the crabgrass comes up and everything, and you need someone on your side. And I've appreciated having you on my side when I was like, what am I doing? Should I do this? So that's been great.
I love that in so many ways of, yeah, having your tribe to remind you of that courage of, because we do, you mentioned earlier imposter syndrome, and we go through cycles of that, whether, yeah, you're writing a book and you feel like it's the platform, or you're owning a business. You're like, what am I doing? Why are people looking up to me? How did I get myself in this position? I'm not meant for it. I wasn't meant to be here. And you just get in this cycle of that, and you often need that voice of reason, or that person that you can feel you can ask.
Yes.
Now I was just doing another interview, and it was odd. It was a great thing that guest said of his mentor. One of his mentors reminded him that if you don't have that feeling that you want to burn it all down, that like, what am I doing here, at least once a month, then you're not playing big enough.
I love that. And I think, you know, again, I'm a fan of your book anyway, but I think there's just I love that courage is not always a roar. Sometimes it's a whisper. And I think that's the piece that what drives you to keep going. And in that whisper, that's where that doubt happens, but you're right. You know, we'll talk about my book in a minute, but that it does take some courage to take a stand on something, especially in today's society when we have such a polarizing society and conversations can be challenging. But I love the idea of creating a network of people around you who are willing to say, no, it's worth that. And I think we all need that tribe. I think a wise person in the past told me about even the book, The Ugly Duckling. Just remember that it wasn't that he was the ugly duck. He just didn't have his tribe, right? And the end, you find out he really just wasn't with his tribe the whole time. And so I think that's the piece when you feel like you have a crazy idea, you know, it can be lonely. And so when you find your tribe, that's when you're like, okay, I can do this. And that's a beautiful moment.
You have so many good analogies. When are you right?
Okay. I have had, believe me, you included, I've been fortunate to have a village of people. And so I give credit to many others who have helped me in moments. And I hope I can only share a little bit of that advice with someone else to encourage them.
Well, let's dive into your book and, you know, kind of what inspired you to write it. I remember when we sat down, when you were beginning the book journey and you were telling me what it was about, I was like giddy. I'm like, oh my gosh, these are conversations that need to be had. So tell us about what inspired you to write this book and to take a stand on a message.
Yeah. So thank you. So I'm really all about challenging deeply ingrained gender stereotypes. Not, you know, more so that because I think they limit beliefs for people. And I'm big on like, hey, dream big. Don't let those limiting beliefs define you. That's not to say one way is right or wrong. And just, I put in the book, and I want to be very transparent, that gender has become this beautiful mosaic And I focus on a niche category, which is the male-female aspect of this area. But for me, I'd worked in large corporations, PepsiCo, Goodyear Time River, some large companies. And what I noticed is right after Me Too, women were talking, sharing stories, the buzz was high. My male counterparts, not so much. And it really intrigued me. Now, admittedly, I get why. Like, it was the examples in the media were really focusing on the extremes, the men who had made probably decisions that weren't so great. And admittedly, there are probably cases against women too. We need to acknowledge that men experience those things too. But I worked with a lot of good guys, and I was like, oh, why aren't they speaking up either? So I'm a naturally curious person. And I would say, Angela, that another advice I got over the years is a lot of people told me you ask too many questions. You know, I've been criticized a lot for that, too much energy, too many questions. But a wise coach told me, you know, listen when someone says you're too much of something, you're T-O-O, because that's your superpower in some way.
Oh.
And so I love that advice. I keep that a lot. So when someone says you're too of something, just what is that? And we can talk about that later. But in this case, I'd always been told to ask too many questions. But one of my friends said to me, hey, Corey, don't make assumptions about why the men aren't speaking up. Ask. And with a journalism background, naturally, in my undergrad and a master's in communication, I actually hired a professional researcher because I wanted a process to it, and reached out to my network with through other people and asked, would men be willing to talk about this in anonymous one-on-one interviews about their views on gender equity? Something that they don't typically talk about very much. And it was fascinating. They had a lot to say, Angela. And that was the neat thing about it. And I, you know, we can go on and on about that. But I think really the impetus was that curiosity to ask, engaging the men in conversations, but I love conversations, and then finding insights, because my goal is really not to blame either side, but really change the narrative and engage men in the conversation.
I love some of this. We're going to dive further into the book, but some nuggets that I love that you shared. That's a great reminder of when someone says you're too much, that's your too of anything, that's your superpower. And we should all be more curious. We, in so many areas of our lives, everyone.
No, and there's some great research out there about that curiosity is the antidote to judgment. And so that's, I love that, Angela. I'm a big believer in encouraging people to be curious. You know, there are times where, you know, look, like I mentioned, you know, the baseball diamond has beautifully curated turf. Like, my yard is not that beautiful. I wish. And so I think that in that sense, the same thing, I would like to say I'm curious all the time. But being conscious of, like, when I have a judgment in my head about something, like, oh, well, what's happening there? Because as you know, Angela, we talk about this a lot. What people put on Facebook and social media is the beautiful side of what's happening. But we also know people are very complex. And so behind that, there's, you know, nobody is immune from challenges, self-doubt, all those things we face. And the more we talk about it, I think the more that people feel comfortable having that conversation. That's really what I want to have happen at the end of the day.
Yeah. And it's true in every area of life. I mean, definitely this one of, yeah, be curious, wonder why, you know, ask why they're silent, not just assume why they're silent. But I love the antidote to judgment. And I think curiosity is definitely that, the antidote to judgment in judging other people and also in ourselves, of being curious why something is coming up, why you are feeling some way. Be curious instead of, you know, just judging why something happened, judging somebody else, or judging yourself.
And I love that you're taking it to the interpersonal thing, because that's an area I forget a lot too, but you're right. It's really good to start to question why. And sometimes it takes courage to do that, right? It's very, you know, it can be very like, ooh, ouch, I don't like that I thought that way. Or, oh, and I don't think we need to make an excuse. We feel how we feel. The question is then, what do we want to do with it, right? And so, yeah. You know, another nugget that I learned, and I started to drop these, but I just feel so blessed to have people share these with me, that another mom shared with me a tip about, you know, we accept, we adapt, and we advance. And so the idea of accepting what is right now, whatever it is, whether it's your thought, your feeling, your action, whatever, decide what you're going to do about it, and then move forward. And I think that's the piece of like, okay, how do we do that and look at situations, not from a judgment, but curious why? At the end of the day, there might be a whole reason behind things that you're not even aware of. And that's what I found out about these men. I was like, wow, this is fascinating.
Yeah. Wow. We're going to dive more into the men, but first we're going to take our first commercial break and then we'll be right back.
Sounds great.
Have you considered artificial turf? It's great for areas with high precipitation, which means no mud after a heavy rain and no more mowing wet grass. Today's artificial turf is made using recycled materials and helps to reduce water consumption in areas of drought. Turf Envy's artificial turf is constructed of quality raw materials, safe for pets, humans, and our environment. With decades of experience, our staff can help with support, training, and product education to give you confidence when estimating a project for a potential customer. Learn more at turfenvyusa.com today.
You're listening to Turfs Up Radio, the only radio station of its kind dedicated to the green industry. Turfs Up Radio, your industry, your station.
Hey everybody, Wayne Voles, The Prophet, your host of Prophet Time here on Turfs Up Radio. If you listen to my show, you know I'm all about profit. As an industry, profit is something we fail to meet most of the time. If you're working hard but not seeing the results that you deserve, Profits Unlimited is here to help. We offer processes and systems designed specifically to make your company more successful, more profitable, and certainly more efficient. When you're ready to take your company to the next level, reach out to me at profitsareus.com. That's profits, A-R-E-U-S.com. And don't forget to turn into Profit Time every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 a.m.
Are you a military family with a spouse on deployment away from home? Did you know that nonprofit Project Evergreen has thousands of volunteers across the country ready to help military families with lawn, landscape, and snow removal services? We call it Green Care and Snow Care for troops. If you are a military family and would like to receive this free service, or if you'd like to volunteer to help, visit projectevergreen.org. Project Evergreen, creating a greener, healthier, cooler earth, one yard at a time.
Busy work burning you out? Kick it to the curb and do more of what you love. How? With Landscape Management Network, to spend less time creating estimates, tracking crews, doing job costing, managing invoices and payroll, and more. FYI, the average LMN contractor spends 50% less time doing payroll, increases profits, and lands more jobs. Put an end to burnout. Visit GoLMN.com/TurfsUp. That's GoLMN.com/TurfsUp to get started.
And we're back. Okay, so all kinds of great things about being curious. And I love the nuggets because I love accept, adapt, advance. And I mean, that's a great thing. That's a good thing to have on a sticker on your...
Amen. I use it with my kids all the time. Yes.
Yeah. Kids, situations. I mean, things happen in life and you can either become paralyzed by them or do that. Be like, Absolutely. Okay. The situation is, how do we need to pivot, adapt, and then how are we moving forward? So that, I mean, that's going to
be awesome. I know, friend, we got lunch. I got to share all these with you now over this time.
Anyway. Okay. So diving into the May of being curious. And like I said, that first conversation when you said that, you know, you were doing research on this and exploring it, I'm like, I am so curious. What are they saying? Yes. I was like, the poor people being silenced, of giving them a voice, because it wasn't something that was acceptable to talk about. I mean, I feel like they were silent. You know, men were silenced in this post-Me Too era, and no one knew what to do with it. I'm assuming, are they silenced because they think they should be, you know, they think they're forced to be silenced? Or so tell me, what did the men have to say?
So let me give a little context first in that. So the other reason I was curious is we know the research shows that men hold the majority of positions in leadership. So I can talk about corporations, that men are 80% of C-suite positions. We know that happens probably in many industries across the board. And why that's important is then men do influence policy and decision making in that sense. So if they're not talking about it, then what's happening to the issue? And so I think that's that combination. But what was fascinating for me, Angela, I think one of the men I called, one of my favorites was, I mean, all of my have so many favorites, but one of my favorites, when I called him, he goes, "Oh my gosh, I've been waiting to talk about this for the past 18 months. And I was floored, because stereotypically, when I've been in meetings and as a woman in meetings, we talk about that often men are talking in the meeting and women aren't. And you hear stereotypes of men talking over women in meetings and other pieces. And so, you know, we had an interview guide, so I followed the process. But at the end, I said to him, I said, "Hey, just curious, you started out this call so enthusiastic, wanting to talk about it. Thank you. Great, great nuggets." And at the end of the day, I said, "But why didn't you speak up?" And he paused and he said, "You know what? Nobody asked me." And I thought that was fascinating. I thought, here we are. And he, Angela, during the interview, he gave some great pieces. Like, he shared with me that he read an article about a great technique that was used during the Obama administration by women in the room. And it was really a technique of echoing. And when a good idea was shared by a woman in a meeting, the other woman would reinforce that and say, "Oh my gosh, Angela had this great idea. Let's follow that." Or that was the whole, and he sent me the article after the call we had. He said, "Share it with women in your network." I loved his enthusiasm. And I thought, wow, had I not asked him, he would not have shared that nugget that he had. And so I think that really opened my eyes to think about what else. Another man talked about, you know, you really should study the March on Washington, Corey. And I was like, fascinated. I'm not that much of a history buff, but of course I've studied that galore. I write about that in the book. But his whole idea on this was that during the March on Washington, the six Black leaders realized that there was apathy among the white leaders who were for the cause of equality. And so they strategically involved, found common ground around wages and involved the white leaders so that they had more successful, sustainable outcomes. And it was a very successful march. Now, you can still argue that, sure, you know, inequality still exists, all that aspect. But the idea was, his point was, you know, maybe you need to find common ground and engage those who are really in the majority. And it really made me think differently. So I thought, oh my gosh, these men have actually some great ideas. And if they're not speaking up, then are we losing some of that idea too? Because we know that innovation is best when multiple voices are speaking up and adding to that. So those are a few examples that I was like, wow.
Innovation is best, when people are speaking up, when we are hearing everyone's side to the story and everyone.
And then the men even said to me, you know, they totally get the point that the importance of diversity in leadership, because the research shows there's better financial returns, better innovation, you know, leadership aspects. There's all sorts of these benefits. They even got that. What was interesting when I said, okay, if you get the business case, then why aren't you advocating more? Because from a growth standpoint, if truly diversity in leadership means more growth, why aren't you advocating for that more? And this is where it was interesting, Angela. What the men said is, we don't know what's going to happen to us. Meaning, if in that aspect, there was a win-lose scenario happening. Meaning, if more women or diverse people come in, what happens to my role? And I think this is where I thought the nugget become great, why I talked about my title with Men in the Middle and these conversations to gain momentum with gender equity silent majority, because this group still is a majority of leadership positions.
Yeah.
But to gain momentum, we probably need to talk about those topics that we're not talking about, that we maybe gloss over, like the feelings that these men are experiencing. And I don't mean to use the F word in that sense. I know that's uncomfortable for a lot of people. But in this sense, if we don't acknowledge the feelings, then that will perpetuate. And so even today, even though some people said, well, Corey, Me Too happened a long time ago, you know, I'm like, well, wait a minute. You know, these feelings didn't go away, right? The aspect of the raised voices, importantly, and I'm a big advocate of that, it raised voices and elevated for women talking, because I think that the more we have dialogue, the more we can change and reframe an issue.
Yes. Yeah.
But for some men, that meant talking less, because now it was a fear of, how are people going to respond to what I say? Is this even my conversation to have?
And that's a conversation to have. Yeah.
And so if we don't involve, acknowledge that, hey, and so at the end of the day, what was fascinating for me, women and men both coming from different angles, fear, uncertainty, ambiguity. So same feelings, but from very different angles. And that's the point of perspective taken that I want to get out there. Like, hey, let's just have this conversation. Like you and I, you're like, this is great. Yes. Let's acknowledge that. And then we can move forward in a different way.
Exactly. And I love that the book does just that. Like, it opens up conversations. And that was a lot in our conversations of like opening up, you know, that this would spark conversation, that it's a tool to, you know, create this dialogue that wasn't being happened, yes. that wasn't happening. And I love that you said, you know, some of the men were thinking, is this my conversation to have? Is this a topic I'm supposed to talk about? Or am I allowed to have feelings in this? Because it was so focused on the women coming forward. And we are all driven by insecurities when you're
yes.
like the men believe the diversity is better, but what does this mean for me?
Yes.
And we all have this unconscious fear. We all have it buried within us, whether, you know, we want to acknowledge it or not, of what does this mean for me? The fear of loss for yourself, mm-hmm. Of what does this mean for me? And that's a whole different thing than them even being able to talk about it, or is the conversation yes. have, but the feeling that they were kind of forced to bury, but yet, as you said, they are the majority. They are the decision makers.
Yes.
Now and all so, driven by these bottled up feelings because they're not talking about it.
Absolutely. And you know, I did a short TED talk on Lakeshore Drive women for this, but I talked about, I literally joke around about the F word because in that sense, feelings are uncomfortable to talk about for many people. And I want to be clear, some men are very comfortable talking about it. But on the whole, that's not a safe space. And especially in a corporation where data, it's a data-driven organization, right? It's all about data. But when I did the research, I'm like, oh, how fascinating. Even research shows that emotions drive decisions more than data does at the end of the day. So if we're not acknowledging that there's some of this fear and apprehension out there, then how do we create a safe space for that? It's really to flip the narrative, right? You're right. Like, Angela, you made me think, you gave me great advice before my daughter got married. And you said, you know, ask people how they want to feel. Ask my daughter, how does she want people feel after attending her wedding, right? That mm-hmm. was such great advice. And I've used that with other things because at the end of the day, how do I want people to feel? I want people to feel seen and heard. I don't have to agree with what people are saying. And by the way, many men have said to me, Corey, you're not a man. How can you speak for men? I'm like, let me be clear. I'm not speaking for men. The men I interviewed allowed me to use their words. The research that I got backed it up. And so I'm just sharing an insight to create a conversation. That's really what I want to do, to flip that, to engage men, to flip the narrative, if you will, that yes, gender is a conversation we want men to engage in, also gender equity. And so this is an area, and I've, you know, part of my manifesto really is about men and women are designed differently, but really a dynamic duo for change when working together.
Yes. Yeah. When working together. And like you said, it is a conversation opener and yes. giving them a voice. Like, you just have such a way with words. Even going back to your title, like the silent majority.
That was fun. You know, it was picking a title, and you know this, Angela. I think that I often write about the shortest thing you write in the book is probably one of the most intense decisions you make in my book. There were any number of iterations about that. But what I loved is the idea of the bell-shaped curve, that there are, of course, there are extremes in every issue. And unfortunately, the majority of conversations today that we see on social media and others, people are in the extremes. But let's face it, not like that's the smaller portion. When you think about the bell-shaped curve, the majority are in there in the middle. You know, from a marketing standpoint, that's the group you want to move. I think from a conversation decision standpoint, that's the group that you can talk to. And what I found in that research is like, they actually were advocates. They were actually for the issue of gender equity. It was about what's my role in this? Or even looking at something like meritocracy, thinking that, you know, we shouldn't really look at any traits, but the best, you know, let the best candidate rise to the top regardless of gender. And I love that idea. It's just that we know that bias is built into almost every situation we're in. And so how do we deal with that, but open it up to conversations?
I love that. Well, we're going to dive into more like of your personal book journey. We talked some about the message of the book, but you know, what it was like to get uncomfortable and in that journey right after this second commercial break.
Sounds great.
Art from darkness. For over 20 years, Cast Lighting has designed and manufactured the world's most durable, energy efficient, and technically advanced landscape lighting products available at astonishingly affordable prices. Cast offers an all-encompassing line of products with everything you need to get the job done. Cast Landscape, their most durable product, is best-in-class, low-voltage landscape lighting made of solid bronze with integrated and drop-in LED technology. These fixtures are built to endure the most demanding environments. Source Lighting, a new division by Cast, is your source for professional grand landscape lighting made of durable brass, offering both integrated and drop-in LED technology and backed by Cast, the world's most durable outdoor lighting. Cast Lighting gives you innovative, state-of-the-art, old-world craftsmanship with tomorrow's technology. Visit their website at cast-lighting.com today. That's cast-lighting.com.
From the East Coast to the West Coast and around the world, no one rocks like Turfs Up Radio. Turfs Up Radio, your industry, your station.
Kress is leading the transition from gas-powered lawn equipment for professional operations with the introduction of the industry's first truly game-changing innovation in battery-powered OPE. With the Kress 8-Minute Cyber System, professional landscapers can now replace their messy gas-powered equipment without sacrificing performance, power, or runtime. The 8-Minute Cyber System allows for Kress-made 60-volt batteries to fully charge in 8 minutes or less, just enough time for a water break. Complemented by a full line of equipment benchmarked against gas-powered products, landscapers can finally take charge of their business and make the switch to battery. For more information, visit Kress.com. Visit Kress.com.
And we're back for our final segment. So let's talk about this book journey and a little bit about courage and the areas of getting uncomfortable, uncomfortable with you and the top, like taking a stand on a topic. And then just, you know, when you say you're writing a book and putting that out there into the world, just tell us a little bit about that journey.
Yeah. So, you know, the interviews themselves, I mentioned, I love that piece because I love having conversations. That was fun to do the analysis. Like, ooh, is there something behind there? Then it really gets to the writing piece. And I know you've done this, Angela. Writing, I say to people a lot, is there's just a discipline of doing it. Every day trying to write something down. I wasn't always good at that piece of it because I also let others get in my head. For example, I mentioned some men saying, well, you're not a man. True, I admit that. But also I had some girlfriends who I really admire and love and said, are you kidding me, Corey? Like, men have been dominating for years and here you are giving them a voice in that sense. And I'm like, hang on. And so all of a sudden this becomes really this, you know, imposter syndrome. And then I think the other piece that I love that you and Angela talked about in your interview with her is really about the pillars, right? What you give priority to. So from a courage standpoint, like per your definition, my heart didn't let this message go. It continued to gnaw at me. It was this little secret whisper like, Corey, you've got to get this message out. Then these other aspects of doubt happening. And then it's so easy in life to prioritize the things that you can check the box. Like my kids needed something. My job needed something. My whatever needed something. But then sitting down to commit to your own thoughts and ideas and writing those out, that can be your last one on the pillar, because you know what? That's hard. It's hard to say, okay, here's who I am. Here's what I'm going to say to the world. And I think you've done this so beautifully. Angela, when you have, when you have, like, you're really good about your brand. Like, you know who you are, you know your colors. I love that about you. I even love your aspect of you and Jared coming together and the differences the two of you have. I think really stating something as your person, like I've worked for large companies. I've been a spokesperson for large companies. Much easier to stand behind that brand to say, here's what they stand for. Now it's Corey Reed saying, here's my viewpoint. That can be hard, especially when not everyone's going to like that message. Even if I think it's for the right reason. And so that led me to fits and starts. And honestly, I think when I saw you at the book launch you and I went to, when I saw you again, I'm like, what are you doing? You told me what you're doing. I was like, okay, tell me, I really need to write again. And so that is a real journey along the way. I mean, there's other, I'll stop there in case you want, but there's other things that have happened along that journey also.
Yes. And I, like I said, I, it's been so awesome having this front row seat as, you know, idea through the program, through shifts and all of the things, the journey. So we'll get into that, but you, you did a lot. I love how you spoke to the things of, uncomfortable, that it, it is uncomfortable, a personal brand versus a business, whether it's a business that you're representing, like you were on a high, very high level, or even, a business owner. If you're taking a stand, like as your business and, you know, this is, these are our core values, this is what we stand for. It's a lot easier to hide behind that than the personal brand and putting it out there and being consistent with it and believing in your voice. And it's amazing how, I mean, you said you had girlfriends questioning it. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the most surprising parts of my, I'd say, personal brand journey of writing a book and then continuing, you know, to be out loud with that message through speaking, through this, you know, the podcast, through the show, of the criticism that I got. And going back to this gender topic, I do think it's different for women, that a lot of men that take a stance as a personal brand and put themselves out there don't get that backlash for what it is their views are. And oddly, again, I didn't plan on coming up in the gender issue, but oddly, as women putting it out there, it's often women criticizing other women of whatever you think your personal brand, whatever the message is, whatever you are taking a stand in believing in, that it takes bravery to be loud and stand for something and deal with that criticism, you know, deal with people questioning you and then deal with questioning yourself over it.
You are so right on so many levels. And even one of the men that I interviewed said to me, hey, you women don't help each other out. It was a really interesting thing. I think we have to own that too in some cases. And just, yeah. I decided as far as my own brand, if you will, because I think it's really important, first of all, to commit to your own brand. And I've been figuring that over time and what message I stand for. And I think that takes time to do that. But I've just committed in my own brand that I'm going to encourage other women and be an encourager of other people. And I mm-hmm. love the saying, like, hey, you know, a real queen adjusts the crown of others, right? That's the whole point. And not just for women, but for men and women. Yes. Because it does take courage, and let me talk about in my corporate career, I often had to write the first draft of something, like an announcement or something. And that can be tough, because when someone commits words to paper, thoughts to paper, like some leaders will say to me, no, that's not what I meant. I'm like, well, that's what I heard. You know? So really that ability, but really committing something to paper and standing behind that, you're right, Angela. And I think that I admit that this was a 5-year journey for me. This wasn't like, you know, the first book I wrote with, you know, took 2 years, and that was still a challenge in itself. But this one was a 5-year journey because of starts and stops, because of imposter syndrome, because of thinking, oh my gosh, you know, can I really stand for this? You know, at a point in the journey, I was so close, and over a year ago before I launched it, I was so close to launching. But I wasn't okay with kind of some of the quality of editing I was getting. And so I stopped and pulled that back in. And that was a hard one, because people said to me, just do it. Why? You know, and I do believe in that perfect like is the enemy of done, right? We all know that. And I wasn't shooting for perfect, but I did know my brand, and I knew that when I had to trust my gut, and that's something I had to learn to retrust in that sense. And that's what I love about your book, and that, you know, sometimes you face discouraging situations, and you have to rely on your faith or something else to get you through that. And so it's that aspect though, of really finding that, and you'll find your tribe. Like but those are hard days. Those are hard days when I started doubting, and you know, those calls, like you said.
And you were almost done, and being with you at like, oh, it's almost over the finish line. But I am like, admire you so much for pulling back and saying, this is not going to be my work that goes into the world. And I think people, you know, everyone that's listening, I do believe, I think you believe too, everyone has a book inside them. If you want to write a book, you should write a book. Everyone can write a book.
Yep.
But there are all kinds of different books out there. And in an era where it's really easy to self-publish a book and throw a book on Amazon. And I'll say this because I have all kinds of, and I'm sure you know, now that you publish a book, people come to you and say, oh, I want to write a book. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think, because there are books that people put out there, that people write a book and someone proofreads it and they slap it out there.
Yes.
To the world. And people, that is not what Corey did. Like when she says it is years. And that's what people don't understand. They're like, how long? Or how long did it take you to write a book? And I'm like, I'm not kidding. Like 30, 40 hours a week for a year.
Yes.
It's not just the writing. It's all of the things that going into it. And then fine tuning, editing is not just proofreading. It is getting that content to flow together and be readable and to make sense. And does your message really make sense to the world? And so I've loved watching that part of you. Perfection done.
Yes.
A lot of things, but in a written book that is like a legacy and a message that you really want, you know, that has your name on it. I loved watching you make sure that it was your best work.
Well, I thank you for encouraging, because I think I don't want to say to people it takes 5 years, and you're right, Angela, people can write a book, but you and I think that's important. Your point is really important. Editing, like there's different editors. There's developmental editor, there's your copywriter, there's your line editor, there's different editors. And I would have to say that, and my undergrad's in journalism, my master's in communication. I'm a decent writer, right? I have a thing. But I had when I pulled back, I found an editor that really kicked my behind, I would say. And we all need those coaches in our life, right? Whether you're a business owner, writer, whatever, we all need those people when you see things, because I was very clear on something. And she wrote back to me, she's like, this section is awful.
We had the same editor in second section of our book. And I told her that, I was like, man, she was amazing because she kicked my butt.
Yes.
And it was one of the biggest personal growth things I've ever done, because we think we're awesome. And I'm like, I'm a pretty good writer. And it's a whole new thing. Somebody telling you your work is awful.
I mean, there were days, honestly, and I've been edited by a lot of people because of what my career's in corporate communication. I've been edited a lot. And so I would say there were days when I would get her email, I'd be like, I have to build up the courage to open this today. But at the end of the day, I think you're right, Angela, but I think you and I whether you're a business owner, entrepreneur, or whatever, having someone that's going to have candor with you and the courage to speak up to you and say, I want you to be good. And this is another one where I think flipping the script, because I could have kind of cowered in my corner of my house and said, oh my gosh, this is awful. But I knew that the intent behind her, she wanted this to be good like I wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. And I was so committed to the message that there were points she said, your message isn't clear here. And she was right, because I was reading it from my lens where I was coming from. I had my own vision of the world. But I'm a big believer in perspective taking, because she looked at it from a different angle and she didn't know some of these terms I was using, which is probably true for some people in the book. Not that I'm any smarter than anyone else. I've just been exposed to different things. And I think it's a much better product because of it. But it did take some courage for me initially to pull back because my friends were saying, come on. Like I even told people I was done and I was going to publish at a certain time. And I had to really pull back on that and say, whoops, I'm going to take another year. Yes.
I love how you compared the analogy. Oh, there goes my camera. I love how you compared the analogy to as a business owner that, you know, we need to be able to take that, to be willing to have that, to be teachable, to be coachable,
yes,
to have somebody be honest with us about things in our business, things in our life. Like those are the only ways that you truly grow is if you're willing to do that. So that was great enough.
You know, I was thinking about an example, Angela, if we have time to do this. I was thinking about young in my career. I had a big idea for, I was in college, I think grad school. And at that time I worked at the campus rec center and I was actually teaching aerobics in my much younger years when we used to wear like, you know, scrunchy socks and Reebok tennis shoes and everything to teach aerobics. And I had this big idea for this aerobathon. And so I'm like, I was so convinced it was going to be great. I wrote a letter to Reebok. They were going to, you know, just provide some shoes, you know, got some sponsorship, all this, really excited about it. And then we got there and only like, you know, 20 people showed up versus the 150 I thought would show up. And it was a really good lesson in life for me. Like, okay, just because I have a good idea doesn't mean I have aligned people and bought into my vision. And I think about that a lot when I work with people that say, hey, big ideas, I love it. Big ideas are great. What do you want to do with that idea? And so you might have to figure out how to talk to others about it because my language, my passion obviously wasn't coming across to others. And so the attendance that year wasn't what I thought it would be. And we all learn from those issues. And so I share that a lot with my friends to say, hey, how do we then build that energy up and build that inertia up? And the same thing with a book, like books don't magically, you have to decide what you want with your book goal, much like what you want with your business. And what sales matter to you and how you're going to do that. And it's that constant drumbeat. And so I just, you know, I obviously really appreciate this opportunity and I love it. And I hope that the Terps Up audience really has an opportunity to also compare this. This is just like running a business. It's really having that courage to decide what you want to do and then having people around you who encourage you and give you that courageous feedback that you need to be even better at what you do.
Oh, I love it. And thanks for sharing that last story. You're right. I mean, that was good. I'm getting people aligned and behind our vision. Well, I cannot believe we're out of time. I mean, I can because our lunches go for hours. As we wrap up the show, we always end with a challenge to viewers of what is one thing that you need to do this week to get uncomfortable. That's where growth happens. And so we kick it off with us. I'm going to ask you one thing that you need to do to get uncomfortable. I'll share something. And then viewers, if you're with us here on Facebook, you can leave it in the comments or send me a message and let me know. So Corey, what is your one thing you need to do to get uncomfortable?
I thought about this because I actually have my courageous planner from Angela that I can write these things down that I do. But for me, if I'd say one thing, it's really going to, for me, some local bookstores and seeing, because that's just the way to do it. How do I actually market myself live, not just on social media, not this way, but how do I actually go walk in and say, hi, my name's Corey, and here's what I've written about. And so that's my goal this week. And you're going to encourage me to do it.
I'm going to hold you accountable for that. I love it.
Please do. Please do. I know you will. And that's why I was like, I better have a bold one there.
I love it. Okay. So mine is, I talk a lot about rituals and habits and how important they are and sticking to those. And sometimes we need to reevaluate those and get some clarity in them. And that's uncomfortable with me. Sometimes, you know, just the safety of our usual rituals. And I believe it's time, you know, we go through times of transition in a new phase that I need to redefine and recommit to those rituals, but redefine them first, that I'm not just having these rituals out of safety and security, that I'm really invested in rituals of growth and maybe need to add in some rituals that make me uncomfortable each day. So stay tuned for what I have committed to on those next week.
I love it. Love it. And I'll be here to help you hold you accountable, my friends.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Corey. Thank you, viewers, whether you're tuning in live on Turfs Up Radio on Facebook or listening to us by recording, do not forget to download, subscribe, and share. What do you need to do to get uncomfortable this week? Have a great week, everyone.
Thank you.